Good morning. Today's daf in Shkalim Yud Zayin. We are in Tzayin Amud Beis. We have a little bit to finish up from yesterday's daf. We are discussing the Luchos. The Gemara brought down a number of points of discussion and contention regarding the Luchos. Notably, the Gemara discussed whether or not the Aseres HaDibros were written divided between the two Luchos. That's our typical picture and illustration. Ask anybody how they envision the Luchos. So it's five Dibros on one side, five Dibros on the other side. And that's pretty much the picture that everybody has. Meanwhile, the Gemara Shkalim has no less than four opinions in terms of how the Dibros were written on the Luchos. One opinion is, as we just laid out, a second opinion is that Aseres HaDibros were written on each of the Luchos. A third opinion is that you had 20 Dibros on each of the Luchos, front and back. And there's another opinion which had 40 Dibros on each of the Luchos and all four sides of the Luchos. So on top of that, we also had a discussion debate in terms of the configuration of the Aron. What was the size of the Aron? And how were the Luchos configured inside the Aron? Was there a Sefer Torah inside the Aron as well? So all this was open for discussion as we saw in yesterday's daf. We're going to just pick it up right where we left off yesterday. We're on Tav Zayin Amud Beis. We're about a third of the way from the Bam the Amud. We're starting with Chananya ben Achi, Rabbi Yeshua Omer. So this is Chananya, the son of Rabbi Yeshua's brother. Okay, it's otherwise known as his nephew. So Ben Koldipa v'Dibra Diktugeva Osiyaser Shol Torah. So between each one of the Dibros, so you had all the details. The details were penciled in, so to say. I'm saying that as a figure of speech. Between each one of the Dibros, the pasuk says Mimulaim Bitarshish. So it was filled in. So the Kiyama Rabba looks like the Great Sea. Means to say that basically, not only were there the Aseres HaDibros on the Luchos, but basically their fine print. And a comment Rashi makes this on Chumash in Perek Chavdal and Shmos. And our Gemara over here speaks to this idea as well. Rashi doesn't quote our Gemara here in Shkalim, but Rashi does make the comment over there that the Aseres HaDibros are really categories, and every one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah basically file under one of the Aseres HaDibros. Over here, our Gemara basically says it's not just a way to visualize it, but it was actually written out. Okay, there is yet to be a work that I'm familiar with that actually puts all 613 mitzvahs in one of the categories of the Aseres HaDibros. But basically, in terms of conceptually, so that's the way it's being presented over here. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon Malakish Havemate Haden Karya. Rabbi Shimon Malakish would get to the pasuk Hava Amar Yafel Limani Chananya Ben Achai Rabbi Yeshua. It's very good. In other words, that what I just heard from the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, that was excellent. So Maha Yam Hazeh, just like take a look at the ocean and Galam Ketanim. So you have these big waves, but in between these big waves, you have small waves. So Kach Ben Kol Dibra V'Dibra, same thing over here. Between each one of the Dibras of the Torah, Diktu Keha V'Osi Oseh Shal Torah. So you have the fine print, the details. Amar Rabbi Tanchuma, It Kashit Kumi Rabbi Pinchas. I raise a question in front of Rabbi Pinchas. Asikah Rabbi Yehuda, V'lo Asikah Rabbi Meir. It works out well for Rabbi Yehuda, not for Rabbi Meir. So my time at the Rabbi Yehuda. So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, so what's the basis for Rabbi Yehuda? It says Lakoche Sefer Torah Zeh V'Samtem Oso Mitzad Aron Bris Hashem. So what you're going to do is you're going to take the Torah and you're going to put it next to the Aron. So Adate to Rabbi Yehuda do Amar. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's fine. So Heichen Haya Sefer Torah Nasun. So where exactly is the Sefer Torah going to be placed? Meaning this is just basically a follow up to yesterday's Gemara. In yesterday's Gemara, we noted that according to Rabbi Meir, plenty of room in the Aron. Plenty. Enough room in the Aron for the four Luchos and the Sefer Torah. And it happens to be that we just quote a Pasuk, and the Pasuk seems pretty clear in Devarim that the Sefer Torah also still is supposed to go in the Aron as well. So according to Rabbi Meir, that works out very good because we did the configuration yesterday. And there was room in the Aron for both the Luchos, both sets of Luchos, the ones that were intact and the ones that were broken, plus the Sefer Torah as well. But according to the configuration of Rabbi Yehuda, go back to yesterday's daf for discussion of the configuration of the Aron, the length of the Aron, and the configuration, there's simply no room for the Sefer Torah. So this is just a follow-up of yesterday's Gemara. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where's the Sefer Torah? And the Pasuk in the end of Dvarim indicates that the Sefer Torah needs to go into the Aron. So the Gemara says, okay, so according to Rav Yehuda, we're going to have to just simply, we're going to have to give a different solution. So, Heichan Hayah Sefer Torah Nason, so Kemin Gluskaya Asur Lo Mibachos. So basically what they did is they made a small little aron, if you will, outside of the aron, and basically it was an attachment to the aron. Vayah Sefer Torah Nason Basoch, and the Sefer Torah is placed inside of it. So basically next to the aron, you had an aron. And according to Reb Yehuda, again, it doesn't conform to the mental image that most of us have, and I'll speak for myself, but nevertheless, according to Reb Yehuda, that's what we have. We have an aron next to the aron. So my time is the Reb Meir. Now, according to Reb Meir, the Sefer Torah was placed in the aron. Dichsiv, the pasuk says, v'nasatas ha-kaparos ala aron, milamala ve'el aron titain, es eidus, asher etein elecha. It's pretty clear in the pasuk. Right, the pasuk over here describes, this is a pasuk in Truma, describes how you're going to take the aron and you're going to put in it es ha'edus, the testimony. Testimony over here, it seems to be a clear reference to the Torah. So according to Reb Meir, that works out very good. Meaning, for Reb Meir, you do have room for the Sefer Torah, and the instructions are to put the Sefer Torah in the aron. So al date de, now we have probably the gear, so over here should be Reb Yehuda. Al date de Reb Yehuda du amar ein muktim amucha b'Torah. So, as far as Reb Yehuda is concerned, the testimony over here is not a reference to the Sefer Torah. The testimony over here is just a reference to the Luchos. So Ella the El Aaron Titanus Aidus Asheratin Lecha, the Akra Kachmanasatas a Kaparas Al Aaron Miyamala. Okay, so basically what he's gonna do is he's gonna splice up the Pasuk so the covering of the Aaron is not necessarily going on the Sefer Torah. As far as the Aidus is concerned, Aidus is just a reference to the Luchos. And the aron is only going to be housing the luchos. And as far as the Sefer Torah is concerned, it's going to be next to the luchos, meaning, or I should say better, next to the aron. Okay, adkan. Almost bringing us to the Mishnah, just one last point of the Gemara. Rabbi Pinchas B'Shem, Rabbi Shimon Malakish, the Gemara quotes now. Now this happens to be a famous Gemara, meaning probably you've heard this Gemara before. Over here in the Yerushalmi, in Shkalim. And that is, the Torah that was given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe, nitna lo eish levana charusa be'eish shchara. So it was a white fire, and inscribed within the white fire is going to be a black fire. So chatsuva me'eish, it was carved out from fire, v'nasuna me'eish, and was given from fire, dichsiv, mimino eish taslamo. So the number of ways that fire are related to the nesina satora, and also the Ksiva Satora, so it's all done Aide fire. So white fire, black fire, so much discussion to be had in terms of what exactly the white fire is and what exactly the black fire is. You can see the Tikkun Chatatan right over here endeavors to give a pshat over here, just in terms of a simple pshat of what white fire and black fire is, obviously, the white part of the parchment and then the littering on top of it. But obviously, the Gemara is to be understood on a much deeper level than that. But for the purpose of Daf Yomi, we're just simply going to go on. And on other occasions, you could perhaps explore a little bit more the white fire and black fire. We are starting now the Mishnah. We're in the Mishnah on the bottom of Tezayin Amid Beis, about to embark on today's Daf. Heichan Ayu Ishtach Havayos Ha'ela. So this Mishnah over here is going to be a good chazar for us, because we saw this Mishnah already brought down to us in Masechta Tamid. The Gemara in Tamid and the Gemara in Midos as well go through the Second Temple and actually takes us through the floor plan of Bayis Sheni. And so over here together in this Mishnah, we're once again going to go over it. Now the reason why we're here, meaning, okay, this is not Masechta Tamid, nor is it Masechta Midos, so how did we get here? So the answer is the connection to Shkalim. It's a loose connection, but there is a connection. And you go back to the first Mishnah here in the sixth parak of Shkalim. So back in the previous Mishnah, so we talked about the number 13, right? This is a parak dedicated to the number 13. So the 13, as it relates to Shkalim, is the Yigimel Shofros. You have 13 pushkas in the base of Mikdash. We haven't really even articulated what the 13 pushkas are. That's coming up a little bit later on. But meanwhile, what else is significant about the number 13? So there were 13 shulchanos in the base of Mikdash, and there were 13 ishtachavayos. There were 13 times that as you're walking around the Azara, so you're going to be bowing down. So you had this number 13, which is basically the theme of the sixth parak of Shkalim. So now the Mishnah over here is going to go over the 13 times that we bow down as we're walking around the Azara. Over here to really appreciate this Mishnah. So you have to know a basic layout of the Beis HaMikdash. We have, Baruch Hashem, we've gone over this a number of times back in Masechta Tamid, back in Masechta Midos, even as we were covering Zvach and Menacho, so this comes up again and again. So probably, if you've been with us for a while, so probably you already have a good idea of what the floor plan looks like. And the Mishnah over here serves as excellent chazara to basically the entrances to the Azara. Note that when we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash, number one, we are focusing, concentrating on Bais Sheni. Two, is that when we're talking about the Harabais, don't confuse the Harabais and the Azara. We're primarily focusing right now on the Azara, the temple courtyard. The Harabais is an area that is a much larger perimeter around the Azara, right? The coastal Amarav, the western wall that we have now, so most probably was a wall for the Harabais, not for the wall of the Azara. So we are going to be describing the western wall here in the Mishnah. It's not the western wall of the Harabais, it's the western wall of the Azara. So just some basic points to keep in mind as we go through this Mishnah. So these times that we bow down, so what are they? Arba b'tzalfon, the arba b'daron, shalosh b'mizrach, u'shtayim b'marav, four in the north, four in the south, three in the east, and two in the west. So kenege shlosha asar sha'arim, and basically they correspond to the 13 gates, meaning as we're going to now take a tour around the perimeter of the Azara, so we're going to go through all 13 entrances, and that's when you're going to do Ishtachalaya. Basically, according to our Mishnah, as we're going to see in the Gemara, there is going to be another opinion, but according to our Mishnah, the 13 times that we bow down is basically when we have an open look into the Azara. So when we see the Azara because of the Kedushas of the Azara, so that's now an appropriate time to bow down. And so now, where are these entrances into the Azara? So here we go. So Drom is Smuchim Lamarav. So what we're going to do now is we're going to start with our southern gates. And we're going to go from west to east. So now, Shar HaElyon, gate number one on the southern side, from the west, going east. So number one is going to be the Shar HaElyon, the upper gate. Now, the topography of Yerushalayim is that it slopes upwards as you're moving from east to west, right? If you have basic familiarity with the Beis HaMikdash, so you know that as you're moving westbound, you're moving to a higher area of Kedusha, and you are ascending spiritually and physically as well, right? You had 15 steps going from the Ezra's Nashim up into the Azara, and each time you move in a western direction, you're going to be ascending physically, right? Obviously, higher levels of Kedusha as well. Right? I'm sure it's not coincidental. Anyway, so we are now going from the west to the east. So the first gate now on the southern side from the west is called the upper gate. It's called the upper gate because its elevation happens to be the highest. I'm sure that there are other explanations in terms of why, but it's a very simple and straightforward explanation. The next one over there is the Shar HaDelek. The Shar HaDelek, so this is much discussed because what it sounds like is that this is the gate that supplies the fuel. Right, the fuel in the Beis HaMikdash is wood, and wood is the serving as basically the fuel for the Mizbeach. The problem, of course, is that we seem to have other chambers that we know about that have the wood in it. So the idea that the second gate on the southern side going from west to east is also called the Shar HaDelek, the gate of wood. So that is problematic. Okay, it's discussed. I'm not going to discuss it now. Next one is going to be the Shar HaBechoros, the gate of the Bechoros. Ostensibly, that's where the Bechoros are brought in. Why specifically through that gate? Not for now, but it's a fair question. The next one over there is going to be the Shar HaMayim. V'lamani kro shmo Shar HaMayim. This is now the one gate that the Mishnah wants to give explanations for. It's interesting, right? The Mishnah is kind of just giving us a really rough sketch, but here the Mishnah pauses and gives us an explanation. Why the fourth gate is called Shar HaMayim? Shebo machnisim psuchis, because this is where they brought in the jug. Shal nisuch HaMayim b'chag. For the purposes of Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkot. So as we know, the Mishnah on Sukkot, this is going to be discussed in more detail in the fourth and fifth prakim of Sukkot. So there we have a special mitzvah of Sukkot called Nisuch HaMayim, the pouring of the water. Without the Beis HaMikdash, we no longer have the mitzvah anymore. But this is the gate that it was brought in, meaning that it was drawn from the Meshi Loach, and it was at this point in time where the water was entered into the Azara through this particular gate. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Bo Hamayim Mifachin. This is where the water is going to be trickling. Vasim Lios Yotzi Mitachas Miftan Abayas. And it's from here in the future that the water is going to come forth underneath the lintel of the Beis HaMikdash. What is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov talking about? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to be spending a considerable amount of time in today's daf going over the sheet of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So, we just covered the four gates on the southern side going from west to east. Now we're going to do the same thing on the northern side. Four gates going from west to east. So they are Shar Yechanya. The gate number one is going to be the Yechanya gate. We're going to explain why in just a moment. Next one's going to be Shar Karbon. And then the Shar Nashim, and then Shar Hashir. Okay, the Mishnah over here does not explain any of these gates with any detail in terms of why they received their particular names, with a notable exception. V'lama Nikra Shmo Shar Yechanya. Why is gate number one, northern side, most western gate, why is it called Shar Yechanya? Shebo Yatsa Yechanya Begalusa, because that's where Yechanya was taken out to exile. So we just covered this in yesterday's daf. Let's review quickly again. At the end of the first Beis HaMikdash period, so you had HaMelech Yoshiyahu, who put everything into Geniza, put the Aron in Geniza, and a number of other things, including the Shemin HaMishcha. And then afterwards you had four more kings of Malchi Yehuda, and that was it. And then Nebuchadnezzar comes and destroys the Beis HaMikdash. So over the course of these last four kings you had, as we discussed in yesterday's daf, you had Yehoyachin, you had Yehoyakim, right? Remember, we spent some time yesterday talking about who was older. Yehoyakim was older. Anyway, you had Yehoahaz, you had Yehoyakim. Then you had Yechonia, who happened to have been the son of Yehoyakim. And then you had Zedekiah. Zedekiah was the final king of Yehuda. And as we went over in yesterday's daf, we're going to go over again right now. And that is that when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he did so in waves. The first wave was during the period of Yechonia. That was the second to last king of Malchi Yehuda. So over here, Nebuchadnezzar came and he exiled many of the Jewish people to Babel. So, and this is what's called Galus Yechonia. Again, referenced in Sefer Megillah. In Megillah Esther. So the Mordechai was part of that exile that went to Babel. And then during the Malchus of Zedekiah, the last king, so then Nebuchadnezzar came and physically destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So when Yechonia went out to exile, he went through that entrance, meaning the Shar Yechonia is named after Yechonia, who was exiled. It happens to be strange, admittedly, that during the Bayis Sheni period, an entire gate is named after a historical moment which really speaks to the downfall of the Jewish people for the first Beis HaMikdash. That admittedly is strange. Also, just another basic question, what did they refer to the gate prior to the exile of Yechonia? So again, much more to discuss over here. This is just a really rough sketch. Okay, Shebe Mizrach. Now we're on the eastern gate. So we've detailed now the four southern gates, four northern gates. So now we have three eastern gates. Shebe Mizrach, Shar Nikanor. So the main gate going into the Beis HaMikdash is the Nikanor gate. Ushne Pishpishim Ayulo. And there were two small doorways, Echem Yemina Echem Ismalo. One on the right and one on the left. Shar Nikanor, named after the donor. In the Gemara in Yuma, we're going to go through together the story that is involved in terms of how the gates actually made its way to Yerushalayim, why it's named after Nikanor. So we're going to do that. We did that already in Talmud. We're going to do it again in Yuma. Okay, good. So not for now. And Ushnaim Bamara V'lo Yalem Shem. And there were two gates out in the west, and they didn't have a name. And so, interesting, the Mishnah tells us that these were anonymous gates, presumably because of their lack of use. In any event, so what the Mishnah now has just put forward is that the 13 times that we bow down, as per the first Mishnah here in our Perek, is going to be in perfect relationship to the number of entrances that are surrounding the Azara. So as if to say that if you're walking around the Azara, so you're going to be seeing the actual Azara on 13 different occasions, which is going to call for a bowing on each one of those 13 occasions. That is our Mishnah. The Gemara now is going to note that that's not everybody's position. Ma'asisa Nabayusa ben Yochanan hi. Our Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Yossi ben Yochanan. Da'amar kenegesh shlosha esrei sharim. He is of the opinion of the 13 gates. Barum kara banan shiva sharim ayu bazara. But here we have one of those machloksim. A lot of them have been happening lately, where it's kind of hard to explain. But over here, there's another opinion that says that there were seven gates to the Azara. Now, again, just basic questions, which I don't have great answers for. How could we possibly have a debate in terms of how many gates there were in Bayis Sheni? Either there was 13 or there were 7. It's very hard to provide an explanation in terms of how this becomes subject to a machlokas. I could make suggestions, but not now. But the Gemara now wants to know that according to the Chachamim, so why are we bowing down 13 times? Meaning the Gemara's assumption right now is that the Chachamim who say that there's 7 gates still acknowledges that there are 13 bowing downs. These 13 bowing downs is part of our Masorah, part of our Tar Shabbat Pah. And so therefore, if there are only 7 gates, so the 13 must represent something else. So what does it represent? So the Gemara goes on to explain. So ki ahid tanin and taman, it follows the Mishnah. This is the Mishnah in Midos, in the second parak of Midos. Shlosh esrei pratzos hayubo. There were 13 breaches. This is now talking about the soreg. The easiest way to explain the soreg is that it was a small perimeter that was put around the azara. Around the azara and the ezras nashim. Again, if you have a picture in front of you, it would be very helpful. So you had a small fence. And basically that fence creates a further perimeter around the Azara. So, and what happened was, is that in the times of the Chashmonaim, so the Greeks, so they breached this fence on 13 different occasions. So, Shlosh Esrei Pratzos Hayubo, Shapir Tzomacha Yavan, the Mishnah in Tamid tells us that that's when the Greek Empire went ahead and breached these, V'chazru V'gadrum, B'nei Chashmonai, and it was sealed up by the B'nei Chashmonai, connecting Shlosh Esrei Shachavayos. And so basically we're bowing down, and basically the idea is we're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's basically part and parcel of Nes Chanukah, meaning so that as we have a yontif established by the Chachamim to commemorate the Nes, but in addition to that, we also have an occasion, if we're going to be walking around the second base of Mikdash, to bow down and also thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the geula that we had from Malchus Yavan. Ksiv. The Gemara now is going to be spending a lot of time in today's daf going over what you and I would call a gadata. It's going to start with a lot of psukim. We're going to be focusing centrally around the 47th parak of Yecheskel. It's not where we're starting right now, but over the course of a good part of today's daf, we're going to be in parak Mem Zayin of Sefer Yecheskel. And the reason why is because we're going to really be discussing this river that we kind of touched on in the Mishnah, but the Gemara now is going to be discussing in a lot more detail. In our Mishnah, let's just remember that according to Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, and our Mishnah, there's going to be water emerging from the lintel of the Beis HaMikdash. And what the Gemara now is going to see is that this is forecasted in many of the Nevuahs, most notably of Yecheskel, but now we're going to be starting off with a pasuk in Zechariah. So the pasuk says Ksiv. We have in the pasuk Vayaba Yomahu Yetzim Mayim Chaim Yerushalayim. So Mayim Chaim is going to come out of Yerushalayim. Usually Mayim Chaim is a description of spring water. Tanimi Beis Kodesh Kodeshim Ad Parochas Bekarnei Sile V'Chilai. Now we have a brisa over here. The brisa is going to give us details. Now the details that are given to us certainly makes it sound like that this is to be taken literally, right? And this is not something which is symbolic or figurative. That's what it sounds like from our Gemara, because our Gemara really is giving tremendous detail, although what, of course, you could say is that the details also are symbolic as well. So again, when are we going to know how to properly understand our Gemara? Obviously, we're going to have to wait for Mashiach, right? We do so on a daily basis. So So this river is going to start out small and end up big, but the Gemara here gives us, this Bryce gives us a lot more detail. Start from Kodesh HaKodesh, and you go up to the Paroches. So the river over there is going to be the thinnest stream. It's basically going to be the Silai Kilai, some sort of insects, and basically the antennas of these insects is going to be the width of the stream. Min Paroches Ad Mizbech HaZavke Karnei Chagavim. Now, it sounds like the direction we're heading is eastbound. That's what it sounds like. But anyway, from the Paroches to the Mizbech HaZav, now the stream is going to get wider, not that much wider. It's basically going to be the antenna of various locusts, and then mizbech hazav ad azaros kechud shel shasi. Now we're going to go from the mizbech hazav until the azara, and now it's going to get wider. The shasi on the loom, So you have the vertical, the horizontal, vertical slightly more narrow than the horizontal. The shasi is a vertical. And then minazaros ad miftan abayis mechut shel erev, kechut shel erev. And so now we're just going to continue heading westbound. I'm sorry, we're heading eastbound. And we're basically under the threshold of the house. So now it's as thick as an erev. That is the horizontal of the loom. Mikan ve'elech kemipi apach. And basically now from that point going forward, it's like basically when you're pouring out, so it's gonna be the thickness of that pour. Ksiv, the Gemara now is turning its attention to Yecheskel. Here we are now in the 47th parak of Yecheskel, and many psukim are going to be darshan, and this is going to be a continuation of a description of the stream that's coming out of the Beis Hamikdash. V'yinei mayim me'efachim in hakatef hayamanis. So water is going to come out on the right side. B'tzeisa ish kadim b'kav b'yado v'yamad aleph ba'ama v'yavirenu b'mayim me'afasim. So the Navi Yecheskel is giving a description. Yecheskel, this is not my expertise to say the least. And these psukim are just simply difficult to read and to translate. And then after that, even more difficult to understand. So over here, at least in the context of this Gemara, so now we're gaining a better understanding of this of this 47th parak of Yecheskel. So basically what we're describing over here is the stream of water. Now we understand better context of what we're even describing. And ad karsula. So basically, as you're measuring a distance of 1,000 amos from the house, the water's up to your ankles. Now another 1,000 amos, and basically it's going up to the knees, and the Gemara basically says ad bir keha. That's now up to the knees. And now another 1,000 amos, and now it's going up to basically the midsection. Ad mastaya. Mikan ve'elech. Now from this point going forward, so now it is going to be a serious body of water. You can't even cross over. And the Gemara comments on this pasuk in Yecheskel, afilu lebiranim gedola inu yechol la'avar bo. These big boats can't even traverse it. Vitzi adir lo ya'aviren, I'm sorry, my taima, sorry, skipped a word. So my taima, so vitzi adir lo ya'aviren, the pasuk says that the boats are not going to go through. Mibnei ma, ki gawa mayim me'shachu. Because basically the waters are just the currents are too strong. So mahu meisachu. So milashut, you can't swim in the water, and even the boats can't go through the water. It's such a strong current. Ama rav chuna ba'asrin kari l'shaita shachvana. It happens to be that in our place, so when we describe swimming, so we call it shachvana based on the pasuk that we just said. So uferes yadav bikirbo kasher yifarish ashalchas l'shtos. The Gemara now quotes a pasuk happens to be we just moved to Yeshayahu, right? You really have to know Nach for today's daf. So we quote a pasuk in Yeshayahu, stretching out his hand, so just like a swimmer does. So ma'al lishchos ha'asamer of Yossi be Rebbe Bone. So mayin demisamalan ba'ama. Everybody speaks about this body of water, meaning Lasa Lava, when we do finally see this body of water that we're describing right now, so everyone's going to be speaking about it. Ksiv, we are going to go back now to Psukim in Zechariah. Bayamahu yemakor niftach lebeis David uli yoshe Yerushalayim lechatasel nida. So in terms of a description of this water, so it has the powers to be metahir. And it can be used for mechatas, and it could be used for a nida. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, sorry, b'shem Rabbi Yonasan. So mi beis David ve'ad yoshve Yerushalayim, from beis David until Yerushalayim. So k'sherim l'nida l'chata. So this word over here, so it's going to have the status of mayim chayim, of a stream of water, and therefore it could be used for both the tahara of anida. And it could also be used for mechatas as well, for the solution of the paraduma. Mikan ve'elech me'taravasein. From that point going forward, so now that water is going to be spring water and rain water that are mixed together, k'shirim l'nida, p'sum l'mechatas. So it would be kasha for anida, because for anida does not need to tovel in mayim chayim, meaning anida could tovel in mayim chayim in spring water, but anida could also tovel in rain water as well. So it would be kosher for nida. However, psula mechatas. For mechatas, you need mayim chayim. And so after Yerushalayim, meaning as the stream now goes and runs outside Yerushalayim, and because it's mixed up with rainwater, so it's no longer good for mayim chayim. Amar Rabbi Elazar, mi beis David v'ayosh Yerushalayim, chayim l'nida l'chatas. The Gemara gives us another opinion. And that is from Beis Avin until Yosher Yerushalayim, it would be kosher for both Nida and for Chatas Mikan Ve'elech, Mei Katafri Sosein. At that point, after that point in time, the water is considered sloping water. Psulim Lenida Lachatas cannot be used neither for Nida and for Chatas. Presumably what this position is predicated on is that the sloping water is not Mei Chatas. It's not Mayim Chaim, it's not spring water. When it comes to spring water, so spring water serves as a Tahara even while it's moving. It's even as Zochlin, even as moving water. But when it comes to Mei Mikvah, when it comes to collected rainwater, so it has to be stationary. Since this is sloping water, which is now considered rainwater, which is sloping water, and because it's no longer stationary, so therefore it can't serve as Tahara, not even for a Nida. Okay. Obviously, I cover that really quickly, but the basic idea is, again, it's just more descriptions of this body of water that is sourced out of Yerushalayim, out of the Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara is describing it in more detail. Even more detail coming up now in the Gemara Ksiv. We're now back to the to Perek Mem Zayin in Yecheskel. Vayomer Elai Amayim Ela Yotzim El Galilei HaKadmona. So this is now Yechesel's description of the water. So he's describing it now east of the Galil. So Zu Yamshel Samchu. So this is the Samchu body of water. Now, presumably over here, what we're describing is basically the water as it goes from basically just above the Kinneret down to Yam HaMelech. This is what Yechesel seems to be describing over here. There was a lake above the Kinneret called the Hula Lake, and it sounds like from our Gemara that it was a significant body of water at one point in time. So this and the Gemara describes it as Yamshel Samchu, and now going back to the pasuk in Yecheskel, V'yardu Al Ha'arava Zel Yamshel Tveria. Now we're going to go down, and the next body of water is the Kinneret. Ubao Yamavi Zel Yam HaMelech, and now we're going to go down one more. And that's the Yam HaMelech. El Hayama Hamutzaim, and it's gonna funnel out to Zeh Yam HaGadol. That's referring to the Great Sea. Now, it doesn't work out perfectly with the way we understand the geography. The Yam HaMelech kind of just sits now in Yam HaMelech, and it doesn't go out, but there must have been a period of time, or we can go in the other direction. There will be a period of time. Well, eventually it's gonna flow out into what you and I describe as the Yam HaGadol, which generally we describe as the Mediterranean. V'lamani kroshmo motzaim. Now over here, that pasuk Yecheskel describes motzaim k'neged shtei pamim shiyatsa. It overflowed two times. Echad b'dor Enosh ve'echad b'dor Haflaga. So during the generation of Enosh and during the Dor Haflaga. So obviously we're going well back in history. So it overflowed two times. So it certainly sounds like from our Gemara over here that historically, the Yam HaMelech was a Yam, not a just a depository, but it was a river that flowed and overflowed. Rabbi Elazar b'shem Rabbi Chanina b'rishon yatsa al Calabria. Originally went up to Calabria. Now presumably over here we're heading east, and Calabria presumably is a portion of Italy. And a description of the water going all the way out to Italy. Uvishnia yatsa ad Kipe Barbaria. And then it went out to the Barbary Coast. So, and again, presumably, Barbary Coast is the northern section of Africa. And presumably over here, it's a description of these waters basically making up the Mediterranean Sea as we now know it. Rabbi Acha b'shem Rabbi Chanina, b'shon yatsa ad kapi Barbaria. The Gemara is just giving us another opinion. Originally went out to the Barbary Coast. Ushnia yatsa ad akova ad Yafo. And then it overflowed all the way to Akko and Yafo. So ad po tavo velo tosif, it's going to go here no further. Ad akko tavo velo tosif. Upo yashis b'ga'on galecha. And basically a description of the waves. Ad Yafo yashis g'on galecha. The waves are going to go up to Yafo. Nicha yamarabba v'yama de milcha. So these springs that are coming out of the Beis HaMikdash, which are going to the Yam HaGadol and are also going to go to the Yam HaMelach. So the Gemara says, Nicha, it's very good, meaning I understand. Bishvil Lemitkan, because basically the waters need, those are salty waters, so they need a lot of sweetening. So the idea is that the water that's going to come out of Yerushalayim and enter into the Yam HaMelach, enter into the Yam HaGadol, is going to sweeten it. But Yamad Tver, Yamad Samchu. But when we say that that these waters are also going to hit the Tveria and the Chula Lake, so why? In other words, the Gemara says those waters over there are good. They're already sourced from springs. So the Gemara says, L'rabos dagosam, yeah, but still, what's going to happen is that when the waters of Yerushalayim are going to enter into these areas, so it's going to increase the production of fish in these pools of water, Dichsiv Bay. So here we go back to the 47th parak of Yechezkel. Leminat tia dagasam. There's going to be many different varieties of fish. Lemine minim tia dagasam. The Gemara just comments on the number of varieties of fish that are going to be produced as a result of this, injection of fresh water. Tani, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Amar Shimon ben Gamliel Maisa Shalach leSidon. On an occasion, I went to the town of Sidon. Veivis alafan of Yosef Mishalosh Meos Minei Dagim. B'tam Choyecha, 300 different types of fish on one plate. Okay, so the Gemara quotes this idea that there could be multitudes of fish. We are back to Mem Zayin in Yecheskel. V'nirpu amayim b'tzoosav g'va'av v'lo yirpu l'melech nitanu. The waters are going to be sweetened, and then the pasuk kind of confuses us because it says it's not going to be sweetened. See, v'nirpu amayim v'atamar v'lo yirpu amayim. So the Gemara says just simple pshat in the pasuk. What does that mean? It sweetens it. It doesn't sweeten it. So makum hushmo v'lo yira apu. So the Gemara says, I know it's confusing, but the explanation is that lo yira apu is the name of a place, and it just simply means that the waters are going to arrive at this place called lo yira apu. Okay, so fine. Just easy clarification. Ksiv. We're back to the pesukim. V'al hanachal yalal svaso mizeh mizeh kol eitz machal lo yibo aleh v'lo yitom piryo l'chadasha yivaker. So the Gemara is going to speak about a number of ideas that come out from this particular pasuk in Perek Mem Zayin. Tani amar av Yehuda l'fisha ba'olam hazeh tzvua oseh l'shisha chadasha. So when you're growing grain, so it's a six month process. From planting the seed until harvesting, it's 6 months. V'ilan oseh l'shanim. Now as far as the tree is concerned, so it's one yield per year. I'm sorry, the V'ilan oseh l'shanim asar chodesh. Aval oseh lava, but in the future, and as far as grain is concerned, so it's going to be significantly accelerated. Two, it's going to be it's going to take only a month from seed to harvest. And the ilan osel shnei chadashim, as far as the tree is concerned, it's going to be 2 months. So my time lechadash avivakir, and again, going back to the pasuk in Yecheskel, it says lechadashav. So with months in the plural, but we assume that it means two, so it's going to be a growth. So I'm Rabbi Yosef Lefisha Ba'olam Hazeh Tvua Oseh L'Shisha Chadashem V'Ilan Oseh L'Shem Asar Chodesh. So now Rabbi Yosef, whose opinion is slightly different, starts off with the same reality that the grain harvest is 6 months and the tree is 12 months. Avala Silavo HaTvua Oseh L'Chamisha Asar Yom. So he believes that it's going to be even further expedited. Grain is going to be 15 days. V'Ilan Oseh L'Chodesh Echad. Trees are going to produce fruit every month. We do have historical precedents where a grain grew in 15 days in the period of Yoel. So the karvim yimenu haomer, the omer was offered. So my time, the Gemara quotes the pasuk here in Yoel, v'neitzio and gilu v'simchu b'ashem, elokechem kinasa lachem esamor l'tzaka, v'yori lachem geshem, mora umakosh barishon. What happened the first month, meaning at the beginning of Nisan, is that the rain came down. There was no rain over the course of the entire winter. Then the first day of Nisan, rain started coming down, and obviously we needed the harvest by the Omer. The Omer is the 16th day of Nisan. So the projection is that it started only raining in the beginning of Nisan. That's 2 weeks. That's only 15 days. And then on the 16th day, yeah, they had grains already to harvest for the Omer. So since there was historical precedence for grains to come in 15 days, So Rabbi Yossi's argument is that you have to imagine that the same thing is going to be true. Lasid Lavo, that the acceleration, that will be the normalcy of how long it will take for grains to develop. Now, according to Rabbi Yossi, which according to the first opinion means that trees are going to produce yield every 2 months, but Rabbi Yossi disagrees. What does he do with that pasuk? What he means, the way he interprets the pasuk is that it means monthly. On a monthly basis, the trees are going to be producing. The alei l'trufa, now, the leaf that is going to be produced is going to be a trufa, it's going to be a remedy. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Tarfeh Mitzitz Aleha. So, you suck on the leaves, and basically, you're going to be healed. Usraf Mizona. And as far as the root of this tree, so it's going to be mizon. It's going to be some form of food. So Rav Shmuel. So now, as far as its therapeutic power, the Gemara describes it in more detail. Rav Shmuel, Chanamar Lahatir Peshalamal, Chanamar Lahatir Peshalmatan. So one interpretation is that it's referring to it'll heal your mouth, right? The basically the idea over here is that it's going to restore an appetite for somebody who lost his appetite. That's one possibility, or it's going to be helpful for the pelamata. Pelamata over here could be understood as what the Gemara is about to say. Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Chanamar Lahatir Pel Karos. So it could be that if a woman is having difficulty in giving birth, so it would provide her fertility. Or somebody is a mute, so it'll give them the ability to speak. So the trees that grow as a result of the water that's cascading out of Yerushalayim, so the leaves of that tree are going to be unbelievably therapeutic. And the Gemara gave us a little more detail regarding this. Ule umasan bitzafon. Okay, we are now done with the 47th parak of Yechezkel. So hopefully over the course of today, so we have a slightly better understanding of Parak Mem Zayin Yechezkel as he's providing a picture into the future. And all we did this morning, it's not a small thing, is that we gave us a slightly more detail in terms of what that picture looks like. But obviously, we're going to know much better when the time comes. And in the meantime, we are now headed back to the Mishnah, Le'umasam B'tzafon. We're now in the Northern Gates, and we're going to be focusing on the Shar Yechanya. So Ad Motzei B'Shar Shalom Nevuchadnezzar Lakan. So Nevuchadnezzar comes here. Here, obviously, we're learning the Yerushalmi now. So it means he comes to Eretz Yisrael. So Bavi Yashalo B'dofne Shel Antuchia. So he's literally on the walls of Antuchia. Aviyatza Sanhedrin Gadol Lekraso, and now comes the Sanhedrin. The Amr Lo, he gives man abayis lezelechei reiv. Okay, is now the time? Meaning the Sanhedrin knew there was Nevu at that point in time. And the Sanhedrin knew that Nebuchadnezzar was going to destroy. And it was just a question of when. And as they see in Nebuchadnezzar, so understandably, so the question that's asked is, okay, now? So Amr Lehem, his response is, Osi Shimlach Galechem Tenu Ali. So the one that I appointed to be the king, so I want you to give him to me. And I'm going to go. So they said to Yehoyachin, Yehoyachin and Yechanya are one in the same person. So Nebuchadnezzar wants you. You've been called. You've been summoned. So he heard that. So he took the keys of the Beis Hamikdash. He goes up to the roof of the Heichal. In the past, we were faithful. V'ayim iftechos misurim lanu, and the keys were in our hands because you trusted us. Achshav she'in anu ne'emanim, but now we no longer are trusted. Sareim iftechos misurim lach. So now we're handing back the keys to you. Trein amarayim. Yes, the Bavli gives a similar depiction of us sending the keys back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Bavli, so it was not Yechanya who threw the keys up, it was the Kohanim. Okay, so different versions of how the story went. Trei Amarayim, Chad Amar, Zarku V'od, Lo Yardu. So one version of what happened is that they threw the keys up and the keys never came down again. V'chad Amar Ba'akim in Yanu Tlasu Miyadom. And in another version, a hand came out and took the keys. Kevin Shirao Kol. And everyone in Yerushalayim saw this. The Chori Yehuda are referring to the nobility of Yehuda. So they committed suicide. So Adau Dechsev. And with this, a pasuk in Yishayahu. Adau Dechsev. Masagei Chizayon Malach Efoki Alisa Kulala Gagos. Everyone went up to the rooftops. Chuas Maleas Ir Homia. There was a lot of commotion and it obviously resulted terribly. And what Yeshayahu was doing was forecasting this moment of time where there are many people in Yerushalayim knowing the impending destruction that is going to occur. So they plummeted to their own death. They committed suicide. Okay. Terrible way to end off the first half of today's daf. We start the next Mishnah. The Mishnah here on Yitzayin Amud Beis is now going to say on the theme of this parak, and that's going to be the number 13. So we describe the 13 as it related to the 13 shofars in the Beis HaMikdash. Again, we haven't really given detail to that yet. That's coming up. We talked about the 13 Ishtach Havayos. I'll make a comment about the order. If you look at the first Mishnah here in the parak, so the way it's laid out is Shlosh Esrei Shofar, Shlosh Esrei Shulchanos, and Shlosh Esrei Ishtach Havayos. And now, as we are explaining, we first went backwards. We explained the 13 Ishtach Havayos. Now we're going to explain the 13 Shulchanos. And then in the next parak, we're going to be discussing the next Mishnah, we're going to be discussing the 13 Shofar. So, a little bit strange that the explanations are coming out of the order that the Mishnah explained it. It's kind of like ABC, CBA. Okay. It's just a comment. Anyway, so there were 13 tables in the Beis HaMikdash, and now the Mishnah is going to detail. And again, if you already have a basic idea of the floor plan of the Azara, so all this will speak to you very clearly. If you don't, please get some sort of picture in front of you of what the floor plan looked like, and the Mishnah over here will present itself much easier. There were 13 shulchanos in the Beis HaMikdash, 8 shulchanos in the HaMitbachaim on the north side of the Azara. So basically you had 8 marble tables, and that's the area where the animals were shechted and cleaned. Well, the shechting of the animal could be done anywhere in the Azara, with notable differences between Kachi Kachim and Kachim Kalim. Kachi Kachim can only be shechted on the northern side of the Beis HaMikdash. Kachim Kalim can be shechted anywhere within the Azara. But meanwhile, the tables were located in the north. 8 tables in the north made up of marble. Marble, shaleim adichim es hakarbaim, that's where the intestines are going to be washed. The intestines together with other parts of the insides of the animal are going to be put up onto the mizbech. That's what's called the imurim of the carbon. But before they're put onto the mizbech, they're washed. Understandably, it's not covered to put the dirty intestines inside, so they were washed out. Ushnaim b'ma'arav hakevesh, there are 2 tables located just west of the ramp of the outer mizbeach. Echol shoshash ve'echol shel kesef. One is made up of marble, the other one's made up of silver. Al shel kesef kli sharis, on the silver table you had the kli sharis. Al shel shayish nosnim et ha'ivarim. On the marble table, so that's where the Yavarim are placed. It's basically en route to going up the ramp. So if you had to put them down, you put them down on the marble table, and on the silver table, so that the Kli Sharis goes. Ushnayim ba'ulam mibifnim al Pesach habayis. Now, as you walk into the actual Heichal itself, into the actual edifice of the Beis HaMikdash, so there's a big antechamber. That's the ulam, and there you're going to see 2 tables. So, Achash Shashash v'Achash Shalzav, one is made up of marble, the other one is made up of gold. Al Shashash nosim lechem apanim bich nisaso. On the marble one is going to be going the lechem apanim as it enters. Al Shalzav v'yitziaso, when the lechem apanim is taken out, so it's going to go on the gold table. Shemalim v'kosh v'lo marina, because we have a concept of the idea you have to elevate up in Kedusha. So it's an elevation to go from marble to gold. Echash Shalzav mibifnim shalav lechem apanim tamid. And finally, there is one more shulchan, and that, of course, is the shulchan. That is the gold shulchan. That is where the lechem apanim is placed on it on a permanent basis We've gone over this numerous times. Bread is baked on Friday, put on the Shulchan on Shabbos, kept there till the following Shabbos, and then Chozer, you go again, where you're going to take the new bread, put it on, take the old bread, take it off, and the bread is going to be divided amongst the Kohanim. There are two cups of Lavona that sit atop the bread. Those two cups of Lavona are going to be burnt on the Mizbeach. Those serve as the matir for the bread. And then the bread is going to be consumed by the Kohanim. Again, all this we did in Masechta Tamid. Okay, good. Let's start with the Gemara. Let's go a little bit further this morning. Tani, we learned in a Breisa. Ashal Kesef. Lechem Apanim was put on a table of silver. Presumably over here, the Breisa is talking about in the Ulam. Not the Shulchan. The Shulchan is made up of gold. That's not open for a discussion. But rather, according to this Breisa, that table in the Ulam, that in our mission we described the table upon going in, where you put the bread. So that our mission described as being marble. So here in the Breisa, it says Shel Kesef, it's made up of silver. So, skip the parentheses, Rabbi Yossi. B'shem Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Chanan Yamateba b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Lace Khan Shel Kesef. He says, the Breisa says silver. Nope, it's not silver. So Mimneshu Martiach, because what happens if you put the bread on a silver table? So in the hot summer months, that silver table is very hot. And what you're going to be doing is you're going to be heating up that bread. And basically what you're going to do is that bread is not going to be able to remain fresh. So the Gemara says, that bread's not going to remain fresh. I got news for you. That bread is going to be sitting outside on the, not outside, but the bread is going to be sitting in the Heichal on the Shulchan for a full weekend. You're worried about it spoiling. So lo kein tani ze'echam ninisim sha'asu be'beis ha'meitash she'keshim sha'ayu manichim ha'socham. You're putting the bread on the Shulchan while it's still hot. Hot over here probably means fresh. It's already a day after it's baked, but anyway, it's fresh as it goes onto the table. So kachayim motzin asochom, and it's coming off the table just as fresh. Shenemer lasum lechem chom biyomi lacho. When you take it off the table, it's still hot, it's still fresh. And so over here, so you're worried about, well, if I put it down on the silver table as we're taking it inside, so then it's going to heat up and that's not good. Well, that's not good. Let me tell you, for the bread to remain on the table for a week already starts with a miracle. So over here, so what are you worried about? Silver table. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shulman Levi, Amar, Emes Gerin, Maisa Nisim. So Rabbi Shulman Levi says, yeah. So the Yushami says, Ein Maskirin Maisa Nisim. You don't mention miracles. Probably the Girsa, like we have in the Bavli, is Ein Somchen Al Anes. You don't rely on a miracle. Meaning, yes, eventually it's going to take a miracle to preserve that bread as fresh over the week. But what we need to do is everything within our power, within our control, to minimize the amount of nes that we're going to be relying upon. And so therefore, that table that the bread is going to sit on for just a little bit in the ulam as it's going into the heichal, so the table should be as cold as possible, meaning it should be made up of shayish, and it should not be made up, of silver. And yeah, the Breisa describes it as silver, but the Gemara says basically, we reject the Breisa. By Kume Rebbe Ila. We'll do one more piece for today. And that is, we're going to end off today with the following question. Let's say for whatever reason, we don't have new bread this week. So should we keep the bread of last week on the Shulchan? And the Gemara's answer, I'm along, Sivan, Asata al Shulchan, Lechem Panim Lefanai Tamid, Lechem Panim Afilu Pasul. It says Lefanai Tamid, it has to constantly be on the Shulchan. And basically, the Gemara says, yeah, you keep it on there. Now, the Gemara is interesting. The Gemara ends off with saying, you know, the bread is going to be pasul. Now, presumably, what the Gemara here is making reference to is the psul of lina. That any time that you have a carbon that's left over its allotted time, it's going to be subject to the psul of lina. Now, when it comes to the lechem aponim, its disqualification of lina, so it's a little bit tricky. Because when we talk about lina as it relates to a carbon, that means that if, let's say, for example, the blood was not sprinkled by the end of the day, by sunset, so now that's a disqualification of lina. Or if the meat of a carbon chatzis is left over until the morning, so that also is considered lina, or otherwise known as nosar. Though there, the terms are synonymous. Over here, when it comes to the lechem aponim, it's sitting on the table for a week. And so you're talking about disqualification of lina. So presumably what you have to say is that as long as the bread is sitting on the table, it's not going to be subject to lina, meaning the table provides a halachic sanctuary for the bread so that it does not become subject to lina. And presumably what the Gemara's answer to the question of Rabbi Yilah is that, yeah, now if I keep it on the Shulchan for another week, so it still continues to preserve and not be subject to the disqualification of lina. That presumably is the give and take. Okay, this is where we're going to stop. Shlomo added 10 tables to the Shulchan that we built. So that's where we're going to be starting tomorrow. Let us quickly recap a really long, now interesting, but very difficult daf today, as we went through a lot of difficult Agadata and a lot of difficult Pesukim and Yechezkel. But let's just recap. We finished off today describing the Aron, the contents of the Aron, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, where is the Sefer Torah placed? Because there is no room in the Aron for the Sefer Torah, so where was it placed? And the answer is the Sefer Torah was placed in an Aron next to the Aron, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. And then finally we also ended off with a famous piece of Agadata that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he wrote the Torah, he wrote it black fire on top of white fire. And we did very little in terms of explaining what that meant. But obviously, it's laden with meaning and not for a Daf Yomi discussion. Our Mishnah that started off our Daf today started with the 13 times that we bow as we walk around the Azara. In our Mishnah, it's because there are 13 entrances into the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara notes that there's a Braisa that says that, there's another opinion that says that there are only 7 entrances into the Azara. So why bow 13 times? Because the Yevanim, they breached the Soreg 13 times. The Chashmonaim filled in that breach. And so for every one of those breaches that were filled in, so a Hodah to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that we bow 13 times. Then we go to a comment that was made in our Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that a stream of water is la'asid lavo, going to come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, make its way out of Yerushalayim, and provide water sources for basically every body of water that is in Eretz Yisrael. So if with that, we quoted numerous psukim in Zechariah, mostly in Yechezkel Perek Mem Zayin, also a couple psukim in Yoel, Yishayahu. We really did a tour of Navi today, and with those psukim, so we got a slightly better picture of what this water is going to look like, whether or not people could tovel in such a water, the trees that grow as a result of the water, the fish that are going to come as a result of the water. It really, right? No pun intended, but what's their appetite for the Zman HaMashiach, and to see what seems to be going to be something absolutely amazing. And then finally, our second half of today's daf, we went over the Yigimel Shulchanos, the 13 tables that are in the Beis HaMikdash, 8 on the northern side, 2 just west of the ramp, 2 in the antechamber, and 1 in the actual Heichal itself, what you and I describe as the Shulchan. So those are the 13 tables. We went through exactly where these tables are situated, and we ended off today with just a quick short discussion regarding the Lechem Apanim, sitting on the Shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash, and if necessary, we'll sit there for another week as well. Adkan.